Penguin Random House Audio presents Prince of the Blood by Raymond E. Feist. Read for you by Peter Joyce.
Chapter 1. Homecoming. The inn was quiet. Walls darkened by years of fireplace soot drank in the lantern light, reflecting dim illumination. The dying fire in the hearth offered scant warmth, and, from the demeanour of those who chose to sit before it, less cheer. In contrast to the mood of most establishments of its ilk, this inn was nearly sombre. In murky corners, men spoke in hushed tones, discussing things best not overheard by the uninvolved. A grunt of agreement to a whispered proposal, or a bitter laugh from a woman of negotiable virtue, were the only sounds to intrude upon the silence. The majority of the denizens of the inn, called the Sleeping Dockman, were closely watching the game. The game was pokier, common to the empire of Great Kesh to the south, and now replacing Linlan and Peshawar as the gambler's choice in the inns and taverns of the western realm of the kingdom. One player held his five cards before him, his eyes narrowed in concentration. An off-duty soldier, he kept alert for any sign of trouble in the room, and trouble was rapidly approaching. He made a display of studying his cards, while discreetly inspecting the five men who played at the table with him. The first two on his left were rough men. Both were sunburned, and the hands holding their cards were heavily calloused. Faded linen shirts and cotton trousers hung loosely on lank but muscular frames. Neither wore boots or even sandals. Barefoot, despite the cool night air. A certain sign they were sailors waiting for a new berth. Usually such men quickly lost their pay and were bound again for sea, but from the way they had bet all night, the soldier was certain they were working for the man who sat to the soldier's right. That man sat patiently, waiting to see if the soldier would match his bet or fold his cards, forfeiting his chance to buy up to three new cards. The soldier had seen his sort many times before. A rich merchant's son, or a younger son of a minor noble, with too much time on his hands and too little sense. He was fashionably attired in the latest rage among the young men of Krondor, a short pair of breeches tucked into hose, allowing the pants' legs above the calf to balloon out. A simple white shirt was embroidered with pearls and semi-precious stones, and the jacket was the new cutaway design, a rather garish yellow, with white and silver brocade at the wrists and collar. He was a typical dandy. And, from the look of the Rhodesian slamanca hanging from the loose baldric across his shoulder, a dangerous man. It was a sword used only by a master, or someone seeking a quick death. In the hands of an expert, it was a fearsome weapon. In the hands of the inexperienced, it was suicide. The man had probably lost large sums of money before, and now sought to recoup his previous losses by cheating at cards. One or the other of the sailors would win an occasional hand, but the soldier was certain this was planned to keep suspicion from falling upon the young dandy. The soldier sighed, as if troubled by what choice to make. The other two players waited patiently for him to make his play. They were twin brothers, over 6 feet tall and fit in appearance. Both came to the table armed with rapiers, the choice of experts or fools. Since Prince Aruta had come to the throne of Krondor 20 years before, rapiers had become the choice of men who wore weapons as a consideration of fashion rather than survival. But these two didn't look the type to sport weapons as decorative baubles. They were dressed as common mercenaries, just in from caravan duty, from the look of them. Dust still clung to their tunic and leather vest, while their red-brown hair was lightly matted. Both needed a shave. Yet, while their clothing was common and dirty, there was nothing that looked neglected about their armour or arms. They might not pause to bathe after weeks on a caravan, but they would take an hour to oil their leather and polish their steel. They looked genuine in their part, save for a feeling of vague familiarity, which caused the soldier slight discomfort. Both spoke with none of the rough speech common to mercenaries, but rather with the educated crispness of those used to spending their days in court, not fighting bandits. And they were young, little more than boys. The brothers had commenced the game with glee, ordering tankard after tankard of ale, letting losses delight them as much as wins. But now that the stakes of the game were rising, they had become sombre. They glanced at each other from time to time, and the soldier was certain they shared silent communication, the way twins often did. The soldier shook his head.
"Not me."
He threw down his cards, one of them flipping completely over for an instant before it came to rest upon the table.
"I've got duty in an hour. I'd best be back to the barracks."
What he really knew was that trouble was imminent, and if he was still around when it arrived, he'd never make muster. And the duty sergeant was a man not given to receiving excuses kindly. Now the dandy's eyes turned to the first of the two brothers.
"Play?"
As the soldier reached the door of the inn, he took note of two men standing quietly in the corner. They stood in great cloaks, faces obscured slightly by the shadows of their hoods, despite the inn being warm. Both made a show of quietly watching the game, but they were taking in every detail of the inn. They also looked familiar to the soldier, but he couldn't place them. And there was something about the way they stood, as if ready to leap to action, that reaffirmed the soldier's determination to reach the city barracks early. He opened the door to the inn and stepped through, closing it behind. The man closest to the door turned to his companion, his face only partially illuminated by the light from the lantern above.
"You'd better get outside. It's about to break loose."
His companion nodded. In the 20 years they'd been friends, he had learned never to second-guess his companion's ability to sense trouble in the city. He quickly stepped through the door after the soldier. At the table, the betting reached the first of the two brothers. He made a face, as if perplexed by the play of the cards. The dandy said,
"Are you staying or folding?"
"Well," answered the young man, "this is something of a poser." He looked at his brother. "Erland, I would have sworn an oath to Astlon, the judge, that I saw a blue lady flip when that soldier tossed in his hand."
"Why," answered his twin with a twisted smile, "does that pose a problem, Boric?"
"Because I also have a blue lady in my hand." Men began to back away from the table as the tone of conversation shifted. Discussion of what cards one held was not the norm.
"I still see no problem," observed Erland, "as there are two blue ladies in the deck."
With a malicious grin, Boric said, "But you see, our friend over here," he indicated the dandy, "also has a blue lady, tucked just not quite far enough back in his sleeve." Instantly the room erupted into motion, as men put as much distance as possible between the combatants and themselves. Boric leapt from his seat, gripping the edge of the table and overturning it, forcing the dandy and his two henchmen back. Erland had his rapier and a long dirk out as the dandy drew his slamanca. One of the two sailors lost his
Sample complete. Ready to continue?